Trillions of dollars are being managed by the world's pensions, sovereign wealth funds and insurers. They're the biggest asset owners on the planet, so you'd hope they're pretty careful with all that money. Maybe they should think about investing in Australia's food industry. Barnaby Joyce was talking about the profits there. In 2008, a system was set up to rank the 500 biggest asset owners globally on how well they're managing one of the biggest risks, climate change. We are talking huge amounts. The funds involved each have $5 billion or more in assets. The idea is to encourage the trustees of these funds to ask questions about the proportion of the wealth that's directed towards carbon-intensive investments and the wisdom of the risk they take. The project is called the Asset Owners Disclosure Project. It's an initiative of the Climate Institute, which has just released its fourth global index. Former federal opposition leader Dr. John Hewson is chair of this project. John Hewson, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Before I get to that, though, we just heard from the Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce about the government blocking the Kidman sale to that predominantly Chinese bid. He supports that. You talk to a lot of super funds in your current role. Why don't Australian superannuation funds invest in these sorts of big agricultural projects if they're so crucial to Australia's food security future and, as Barnaby Joyce was telling us, potentially so profitable?
Well, I think it makes a very significant point that our future fund industry doesn't take a sort of a medium to long-term structural view about any of their investments. I mean, basically, they employ managers that are focused short-term and that are remunerated on the basis of short-term performance. So longer-term structural strategic type issues don't get much weight in those considerations. And I think other countries look at Australia and say, well, look, don't you have a strategic view about your land and land ownership? That's different from, you know, developing a food industry. That's different from other considerations in relation to land. But I think it's a real challenge to the industry right now to start to think about some of these issues, which are longer term and structural, where I think, quite frankly, those trustees you mentioned have got a fiduciary responsibility to do that.
Mm. We'll talk about longer term. Let's go to the Asset Owners Disclosure Project. 4 years ago, we spoke to you about this, and you said many of the funds were less than transparent. And this is all about disclosure and transparency, and they were resisting this initiative. Has that changed? Are more funds now more transparent about their investment in carbon-intensive businesses?
Yes, well, about half those funds, those 500 that you mentioned, which are the largest, as you said, asset owners of the world, about half are now recognising the challenge and starting to do something about it. I mean, we only have 12 that we rate AAA in that, but and we've got 31 that we put in the leaders group that are rated above A in our rankings. But yes, they're certainly starting to focus. They're focusing more in an engagement sense. They're employing more specialised staff, for example, to look at responsible investment and sustainability issues. They're certainly starting to measure their climate risk in their portfolio and to manage that risk, I think, monitor it and manage it. And of course, there has been a focus on increasing their exposure to low carbon intensive investments. Having said all that, I mean, I'm still very worried personally that they're running very significant risks in relation to climate. I think they misunderstand and understate the significance of those risks.
What do you regard as the risk, the climate risk?
Well, the risk can come in three ways, I guess. One, of course, you can have extreme climate events, extreme weather events that really do impact on the value of assets and infrastructure. The Cyclone Sandy that went further up the coast in New York, for example, caused New York to think about how it should waterproof itself. Katrina wiped out a significant percentage of Louisiana and of the city of New Orleans. They're direct climate effects. The second one is, of course, government responses to climate, and the Paris Agreement in December has set a framework now where countries of the world will be seeking to find policies that lower emissions dramatically according to their commitments. In that sense, I mean, they will start looking at global pricing of carbon and other policies which will have an impact on the value of these investments. Mm-hmm. And finally, of course, technology. And I think it will be a combination of the three if a crisis occurs. But technology is moving very fast. I mean, the concept of heat and battery storage, which gives solar and wind real value, cost-effective heat and battery storage, for example. Look at the Tesla car, the Tesla Powerwall. I mean, people are moving rapidly to the position where they'll be able to disengage from the grid. I mean, this is going to have a very big impact on particularly fossil fuel investments, but more broadly, climate-related investments.
And how tuned in, from what you're seeing on the index, are the institutional investors? Because the latest report says only a handful are actually protecting their portfolios, for instance, from the danger of stranded assets. Nearly half the world's biggest asset owners are doing nothing at all to mitigate climate risk. And I'm not sure if the same applies to investment in, you know, cleaner energies.
Well, yes, all those points are right. I mean, although there's been a dramatic improvement in the last, since 2008, 2009 when we started, and the world is focusing much more on these issues under the influence of the likes of the Bank of England's Mark Carney and the Task Force and the G20 Financial Stability Board and so on. I mean, these are very significant steps forward. But having said that, it is very concerning that just under 50% of these top asset owners show absolutely no interest in relation to the climate risks that they're running, which we think are very significant. And as Hank Paulson, who was Secretary of the US Treasury at the time of the GFC in 2008, has said, the risks being run here dwarf the risks that were run in the subprime crisis.
It's just coming up towards 8 o'clock. We've only got a minute left, John Hewson. But both the Coalition and Labor are backing the opening up of mega mines in Queensland Galilee Basin. Do you think the big funds will be as keen on investment here in coal as our political parties?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you take the climate change commitments to zero net emissions by 2050, there should be no more new coal mines. And 75% of existing coal assets won't be mined. I think Adani, in our terms, is already a stranded asset in terms of the Galilee Basin project. The major banks of the world won't fund it. Our big four banks said they won't fund it. And I imagine the superannuation industry will stay well away from it.
John Hewson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fred.
Dr. John Hewson is the chair of the Asset Owners Disclosure Project and professor at the Crawford School at the ANU.